You can visit the website anytime you like. It's rte.ie/Mooney.
The long, hot summer seems to know every time you're near, and the touch of a breeze gently stirs all the trees, and a bird wants to please my ear.
This summer in Europe, it was hot, hot, hot. Here in Ireland, we wilted as temperatures of 28 degrees Celsius were recorded in Shannon, Valencia and Cork, not quite reaching the sizzling heights of 1887, which still holds our hottest ever record at 33.3 degrees. Can you believe it? Over in France this year, temperatures soared as an unprecedented heatwave hit, delivering a whopping 45 degrees Celsius high at the end of June. That's what our series producer Anna Leddy flew into when she went on holiday to the south of France some weeks ago on the 29th of June. Anna is with us now with some questions for our panel on summer for observations. Anna, welcome back to the programme. You're on a few weeks ago and the programme hasn't been the same since. Listeners are flooding to us in their droves. Anyway, go on, you're on your holiday. What did you notice?
First of all, just to sort of give you a picture of the scene, it was absolutely steaming hot. Mm. We were in this area, beautiful area, in the middle of nowhere. Looking back on it now, I have this kind of fuzzy sort of Monet kind of picture in my head of olive green rolling hills and sprawling vineyards, very neatly laid out, and dusty roads and that sort of thing. And it was absolutely beautiful. It wasn't exactly teeming with wildlife, but one thing that you couldn't miss was the racket being made by these insects, which I thought were crickets or something like that. But my nephew, who had been on an exchange, reliably informed me that these were in fact what the French call les cigales, which, Aina, I think you would say are cicadas.
Yes, indeed. They're insects. They hang around on the leaves, sucking the sap, and they really live in very warm places. Did you manage to get a recording?
Could you describe one, Anna, before, or Aina, what they look like?
It's quite a large insect. It could be, I don't know, the length of your thumb, a couple of centimetres, but it doesn't make the sound the way that grasshoppers do. So it's not a grasshopper. It doesn't have great big legs, and it doesn't make the sound with its legs. It is a fat insect. It's got wings, got two wings, and it makes the sound with its abdomen. It has plates in its abdomen, which it can flick over and back. It has a muscle behind these plates. Whether if you had a box with a tin lid and you were pinking it up and down, they can pull this forwards and backwards to make this enormous loud sound. And they then have amplifying, more empty chambers. They can amplify the sound. They can make it even greater. Only the males make it. And it's interesting because most insects are deaf, so that cicadas actually have ears as well, so they can hear this. And they do it in order to attract a mate. But the sound is so enormous, noisy, because it's to keep away the predators, which are the birds. It actually hurts the birds' ears.
Seriously, if we went to France to get some peace and quiet, we were not going to get it with these guys around.
You brought some recordings, did you?
I did.
Was this at night you were hearing them, or during the day?
Because
Because the crickets, the thing you hear at night, everyone thinks are cicadas, are actually crickets, relative to the grasshopper, a different group altogether. So if you heard them during the day, cicadas is your man. But there aren't too many species in the south of Europe. There are a few, but not too many. And I never saw France listed as a location of them, so they must be spreading.
Yeah, but it was 40 degrees in the minutes. It's so hot, they're actually able to withstand the heat. They can take the sap out of the leaves when it's too hot for the birds to be out. That's why normally Europe isn't hot enough. It's more an African thing. But this year, you had them in spades.
So, Anna, go on, yeah.
So, I was out with a bunch of family members, and we were having a great old time and having lots of fun and lots of chats over the dinner table. But myself and my brother-in-law became intrigued because we observed that this racket would go on all day, and suddenly, as if a maestro conductor with his baton clicked,
turn
to say
it off.
Stop.
Like a light switch, like the Book of Mormon. Just stopped.
They would just stop, as if on a signal. And I decided, with my Mooney Goes Wild hat on, that this moment had to be captured. So one evening, I left my phone out, and my eagle-eared brother-in-law, Joe, actually noticed at the very moment when they stopped. Now that's noisy, right?
That is noisy, huh? Sounds like one individual.
Does it?
To me, it sounds like, well, in the background there's lots of lots of individual cicadas, but it sounds like just one animal. Maybe not, isn't it? But
there was certainly one very noisy guy. Oh, hold on now, what's happening?
Time,
what's going on?
They all stopped at 10 to 10, but there is one guy in the distance still going.
Everyone around here has stopped.
At 10 to 10.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that has happened for how many nights?
Well, this is the third night, but not necessarily the same time. There have been 10 past 10, 10 to 10, and a couple of nights ago, we think it was about 20 past 9. Silence. Somebody switches off the switch.
Yeah.
God turns them off.
It's amazing. So my question is, how come they all stop at the same time?
Because they're stimulated by the amount of light that's there, and as the evening is coming and as it gets cooler and predators will now appear, they shut up. They're doing it to keep away the predators, but they can operate in the really hot and heat of the sun. Now it's getting cooler and it's getting darker, and suddenly their sensors say it's now stop, because otherwise something will grab us.
And can I ask, is it a very ignorant question to ask, why do we need such noisy individuals?
Well, we don't need them. I mean, why does the world need us noisy people? I was looking at the noisy people on the back of your tape and I'm wondering, you know, well, then we had something else about robins and noisy people as well. I mean, why blame wildlife for noise when humans are very much better able to make fierce amounts of racket? I won't answer that question.
The noise is about mating. The male is calling. He's hidden and he's calling out. And females hear this, and they come trooping in. Now, he's competing with other males around. It's very hard in the females. There is a gecko that waits around. He doesn't attack the male, but waits around until a female comes and clobbers her. So this gecko can exploit this by knocking off every female that comes to the male, which is a rather curious thing. So the noise is about getting your message out and getting it stronger than the man next door, I suggest.
Well, I also encountered some much quieter creepy crawlies while we were out there. We were in right down in the south of France, about 9 kilometres from the sea and in the middle of nowhere, but somehow we managed to find ourselves in a villa beside a band of musicians, which was really very fortuitous.
And very noisy, I'm sure.
Point taken. So we were all going over to join them one night, so we were carrying tubs of food and so on. And as we were going, one of my nieces and nephews observed a long trail of marching ants. Mm. And again, I whipped my phone out to capture this, and I just couldn't figure out, they weren't carrying anything. They didn't seem to be going anywhere for any particular reason, but a long, long train of ants that suddenly just seemed to disperse for
and
no particular reason.
You've got a video of same.
It's on the website.
It's on the rte.ie/mini. But one man who has seen it is in our Limerick studio. He's retired professor of zoology at the University of Limerick, and he has particular interest in Irish insects, especially ants and bumblebees. John, now you've seen this video, haven't you?
Well, for a start, I think they were carrying things, but and the video, she was a little bit far away from the ants, but it's obvious that they are harvester ants, which are common enough around the Mediterranean area. Now, amongst ants, there are some ants that collect seeds, so it's referred to as granivory or grain-eating. So when you see them in the Mediterranean area, the start of her video, in fact, is at the nest, but she doesn't really show. They have a very large crater around the entrance, and then there's a long trail out to where they are actually collecting the seeds at that time. One interesting thing about harvester ants is that, unlike any of the ants we have in Ireland, the ants have different size workers. So there are big ones and little ones amongst the workers. So it's separate sizes. And the big ones actually chew up the seeds and make a paste out of them for eating. And in fact, if you look carefully at that video, you can see the different sizes on the trail.
But are they coming or going, John? I mean, if they're leaving the nest and going, then they're not carrying anything. If they're coming back, they are. So are these coming or going?
They were going towards the feeding site, and the place where you mentioned that they disperse is actually where they have gone to collect the seeds. And so they disperse around there, and they're probably collecting mainly grass seeds.
So they don't come back in the same line. So the line going out...
They would be coming back in the same line.
But the ones that Anna videoed were the ones going out not carrying seeds. They were going out looking for them.
Yes, but they would be, some of them would be coming back and possibly ground up as well.
John, could I ask you about this ant motorways that they establish? It seems to me rather odd. If you look at their relatives, the bees and wasps, they will head off in all directions from the colony, and the good ones, the ones that find things, will come back and tell the others, and everybody will go there then. But they disperse and they comb the whole area. But if you have a dedicated motorway going off out, you're not going to find new sources of food and resources. So how do motorways get established, and do they have experimental ants going out looking for alternative routes so as we can build new motorways out to those? I mean, what's going on here? Why have a motorway anyway?
Well, there are people who study this thing, they call it studying optimal foraging. And the idea is that there are some foragers going out, and eventually they decide that another area is a better site to be going to, and then they move in that direction.
So can you interrupt the line? If you put your foot in the way, what would happen?
You'd interrupt it temporarily. But for the time being, they're going in that direction, and they're definitely going in that direction.
And would they sting anyone who tried to stop them?
Yes, those ones do have stings. But I wouldn't consider them major stings, but they do have stings.
John, we heard earlier that the cicadas, the seagull, they become noisier when the weather's hot. Do ants become more active when the temperature rises?
In general, yes, but quite a few of the species in the Mediterranean area would have a sort of a siesta during the day, because if the ground goes above, I think, around 40, 45 degrees, they then stop foraging. So there would be a lull at the height of the day when it's at its hottest.
So what impact will the heating up of the world, the global warming, have on these? Will they move further north in Europe? What do you think, John?
I could see the possibility that they would indeed, yes. But the mesar species are effectively desert species. And the adaptation to eating seeds and things means that gives them their supply of food, and also mostly most of their supply of water.
And how does their behaviour, if at all, differ from their counterparts in South America? Aina, you did a documentary from the rainforest and had an encounter with ants.
That's right. We were looking at these were leaf-cutting ants, yeah. And they went off and they chewed up bits of leaves. And we encountered them coming back, and they were all carrying bits of leaves over their heads.
They're taking those leaves into the nest.
And the leaves are about 40 times the size of the ant.
That is correct.
And do they eat the leaves?
No, they don't eat the leaves. Actually, they take the leaves into the nest, clean them very well, and then they cut them in smaller pieces. Once the pieces are small enough so they can chew them, they chew them, they add saliva and feces, and they make a spongy stuff with all of that. Then they leave that spongy stuff to ferment, and once it is fermented, then they plant the fungus in it, and that's what they eat.
Oh, so these are the famous ant gardens, where they actually are making a garden.
That is correct.
Those ones, Ada, would have a very similar sort of foraging strategy to these harvesters, in the sense that they would also go out on different trails and then suddenly change and go to a different tree for their leaves.
The Roman Empire comes to mind. There was a time where they had two emperors, and they didn't get on, of course. It ended up in a complete split. Now, I believe that ant colonies, some of them anyway, have two queens. Now, in the bee world, the queen is the boss, and she doesn't tolerate any opposition. Now, how do these two queens manage to function in one colony? Do they hate each other? Do they antagonize? Are they in kind of détente with each other? What is going on? Why have two queens anyway?
Well, I have to break the news to you that some of them have multiple queens.
I can certainly
say that on the one occasion that I've counted it, I've counted 18 queens.
Oh, my God.
So
these are an Irish black ant.
No,
that was in Scandinavia. But the Irish black ant, Formica lamani, which you certainly sometimes see 5 to 10 queens in a nest.
These are the ones we have in our back gardens in Dublin.
No, the ones in your back garden in Dublin would have just one queen in the nest.
And they're there because we've all changed our backyards to having patios and lovely slabs.
And they like pavements, yes.
They
yes.
like that. So
are
you want
the
to
Queen's sisters, are they are related to each other? Is there a vested interest in the progeny of the other one because she's a relative or anything like that?
They're possibly more related, but they're not necessarily sisters.
Why do they do this kind of thing? Huge colony of ants needs a lot of resources. If you're going to have multiple queens all there gathering it all up, this is going to eat into that, isn't it? Why did evolution go that way?
Well, there's at least one species in the wood ant group which occurs in the Alps in the general Switzerland area, and they're thought to be just a single colony. And there's at least one other species of Lasius that occurs in Spain. And some people joke that the colony covers the entire country of Spain.
They're all that.
They're all connected. All the nests are connected.
And they can move between one and
so
another.
So it's one giant super colony.
How are your hairy ants in Ireland? They're the ones you were working on. Are they still around?
They're still around. In the 1970s, I knew about 200 nests. And then maybe 10, 15 years ago, I started getting panicking because I was seeing the... And I have to say, they're still not found in some of the woodlands where I knew them in the 1970s. But things have improved a bit. There are two people in the Woodford area, Donal Keegan from the Forest Service and Enda Mooney from the National Parks and Wildlife Service. And between them, they now have about 50 nests found. And in County Tipperary, there's a man called Eamon Drohan from Quilta, and he has also in the order of 50 nests. So things have improved, but we're trying to put together agreements so that the management of these, especially when you're clear felling the trees, that in other words, that you're protecting the nests, and because these trees need aphids, which are greenfly, but they're not necessarily green, but they need aphids to produce a source of honeydew. And so when there's clear felling going on, the idea is to keep enough trees to maintain the nests.
You mean the ants need the aphids for the honeydew?
The ants need the aphids, yes.
These are hairy wood ants. And
these are the hairy wood ants, yeah.
And that's what they feed on, the aphids, honeydew.
Well, about 80% of the loads coming back in their case are within the gut of the ant, and it's honeydew, which is the excretion of the aphids.
So these ants are there probably since several thousand years. They must be an Irish subspecies of wood ant now or something like that. Is there? Are they unique?
In fact, I can happily say that there was one study done with collaboration. At that time, it was the University in Oulu. Hanna-Lena Mackie-Petaus was her name. And she did DNA analysis of Irish specimens. And yes, they are ever so slightly different to Formica lugubris on the island of England, in England.
Anyway, I preferred the sight of the ants marching away from our house than the ones that were marching into our cupboards.
Anyway, you lived to tell the tale, Annie, you did.
Indeed, I did. And are you fond of these little creatures, John?
Oh, yes. Yeah. In fact, I would tell people that the marching into your cupboards is not a health hazard. The ants don't predict. It's just they're after grains of sugar and possibly grains of bread.
Yeah, they're free dustbin men.
And maybe for the sake of getting a little bit religious, could I be telling you that the harvester ants are, I maintain, the only... There's biblical approbation or whatever for, "Go to the ant, thou sluggard, consider her ways and be wise."
That's a great quote.
It has no commander, no overseer or ruler, yet it stores its provisions in summer and gathers her food in the harvest. And so I always joke my colleagues that ant people have the biblical...
The imprimatur, yes.
Yeah,
indeed.
For doing their work.
John, thank you very much indeed. Very much appreciated. And if you want to have a look at Anna's video, you can visit the website, which is rte.ie/money. I'm tempted to say we should send you on more holidays so we can get more reports. And on the other hand, I'm thinking, your carbon footprint. Anna, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Thank you.